I think during the month of January, God willing, on festival, we're going to be exploring Genesis, beginnings. I've come and gone in the book of Genesis. I think I'll preach on Sundays on Revelation, the last book of the Bible, and on festival, get into Genesis. I want you to open your Bible with me tonight. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. I'm going to anticipate a little of what we're going to be doing tonight. And the earth was without form and void. I hold the view there's a vast gulf of time between Genesis 1:1 and 1:2. You'll find a passage in Isaiah that says God created the earth. They translate it, He didn't create it in vain. Just as legitimate to translate it, He created it not a waste and a desolation. It's just as legitimate to translate that second verse, and the earth became a waste and a desolation. You can thank God that the fullness of time when God sent forth His Son included the fact, as I said last time we were live, that the Greek language ruled the world, at least the then known world. Greek is a precise language. Hebrew is not. It has a very small vocabulary, but multiplied meanings and multiplied inflections of meanings. Beginning in 1975, 71 really, but 75 in full meaning, with the uncovering through archaeology of the ancient language of the Canaanites that blew all the archaeological theories by the dig of the king of Damascus or the king of Ebla in that Syrian uncovering of an ancient city that will prove to be as important to find as they uncovered a library of tablets with a language that is really the root source from which many of the biblical Hebrew words come, defying past thoughts of philology and archaeology and any Hebrew English lexicon will have to be done and is in the process of being redone, taking into account the root words of that old Canaanite language that comes out of that find in the early 1970s, culminating in the full find about 1975, and I believe will prove to be as important an archaeological find as the Dead Sea Scrolls. And once again, archaeology confirms the Bible and doesn't in any way ever uncover anything to defeat it. But Hebrew has been hard to translate. One word means a lot of things. You are just as legitimate to translate that second verse, and the earth became a waste and a desolation, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. Those who believe in the gulf of time between Genesis 1:1 and 1:2, and I'm one of those, believe what we confront then is a recreative period. As God recreates the earth and the universe as we know it and parts of reality that had suffered a great cataclysm. That cataclysm occurred, in my judgment, when Satan was cast from his position, as Jesus beheld when he saw him cast down. And a third of heaven was emptied of angelic beings that sided with Satan. And that cataclysm that struck the earth changed everything. Satan had been the crowning cherub in the mountain of God And as the later prophet saw, was in Eden, before there was a fall, as we see in the Genesis chapter. Jeremiah saw the earth when there were meeting places of intelligent beings, but there was no man on it. And then he saw a cataclysm strike it. Uses the same word as Genesis 1:2, and the earth became a waste and a desolation. Now those who do not believe in the cataclysm between Genesis 1:1 and 1:2 have to put it somewhere around the flood. I don't share that view. And as God began to recreate, he created man, placed him in the garden, gave him dominion over the earth. Then comes the serpent in chapter 3. Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman, yea, hath God said? He started out quoting scripture, you notice that? But twisting it a little bit. He led man to sin. Man believed the devil instead of God. The punishment was God drove man out of the garden. And this may be tough on the ERA, but the punishment for what Eve did, I've said before, I don't like any of the things I have to suffer because of that bonehead Adam. I insist, and will insist to my dying day, I would have done it different. But I still have to bear the consequences. You women that don't like your place, get mad at Eve. Don't get mad at me. Don't get mad at God. And try as you will to change it. It ain't going to work. You women's livers out there, Eve messed it up. And God cursed them for what they did. And when the woman failed, he said to her, well, he got on to the serpent first. He said to the serpent, because thou hast done this, thou art cursed above all cattle and above every beast of the field. Now, I don't know what the serpent looked like. And I don't know what shape or form the devil entered into that was the serpent that beguiled Eve. It says he was more subtle than any beast of the field. And I don't think anybody will ever know. All we know is what that tabernacle of Satan expression became after God cursed it. Now, the serpent wasn't the devil. The devil entered into that serpent. Now, he still called that old serpent, whatever the devil is. He's called that clear up to the end. In the book of Revelation, I don't even know for sure that the crawling beast that we now call serpent were the outgrowth of whatever beast it was that Satan entered into and beguiled Eve. I don't know what the former shape called the serpent actually was. I believe he entered into a creature of a different form and a different shape and a different nature of mobility and movement. And the curse on that beast into which Satan entered. Because you see, the pigs wouldn't even cooperate with the devils in the New Testament. When demons entered into them, they ran off into the Sea of Galilee, killed themselves. I happen to believe the serpent as we now know it is the changed form of whatever that vehicle or tabernacle of beastly flesh was into which Satan entered. But the alternative is, because of the curse, the crawling things could have been given the name. The Hebrew is so ambiguous, we just know there was a being there, an evil presence, called the serpent. He's still called that, and he has certainly a different shape in the book of Revelation. But the curse was, thou art cursed above all cattle, and upon every beast of the field, and upon thy belly shalt thou go, and dust shalt thou eat all the days of thy life. And when I get into teaching verse by verse in Genesis, I'll give you some more on the words being translated serpent. But he says, I'll put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. It shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. Unto the woman, he said, and that verse contains all the prophecy in one kernel, one seed, to be later unfolded in this book of God. I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. It shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. Now, there's profound mysteries in that, because Satan is the target of the prophecy. And every prophecy student teaches that this isn't saying a snake will bite the heel of a woman, it's children. It speaks of that enmity between Satan and his offspring, spiritual offspring, and the offspring of the woman. And that bruising of the heel occurs every time Satan is winning a victory against God's redemptive purposes. And that bruising of the head occurs every time God, through his chosen ones, his spirit-filled and spirit-led ones, puts a stomp on the head of the devil. It happened at Calvary when Christ was bruised for our iniquities. But the old serpent was bruised too, because he seized from him the power of death and the keys of death, hell, and the grave, and bought our redemption. Unto the woman, he said, I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. I want to tell you something. If men had to have babies, there wouldn't be as many kids in the world. That's part of the curse, that pain. In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children, and thy desire shall be to thy husband. That means your wants, women, have to submit to the wants of the husband. It's just plain not fair. I'd get mad if I were you women, that you have to go through life submitting to some bonehead man because of what Eve did. Have a fit. In fact, once in a while you can grit your teeth and say, if it weren't for Eve, I've been preaching for a long, long time. God does what he says and says what he's going to do. Now, if the ERA passes, I'm going to change God's plan a quarter turn. Thy desire shall be to thy husband. You ask me, has that been abused by stinking, rotten, low-down men? You better believe it has. If you got one that won't abuse it, stay up an extra hour tonight and thank God for your wondrous goodness as you look up to him. But don't abuse the good thing you got. It's part of the curse, women. That damnable Eve, listening to that serpent, eating of that tree, and deceiving her husband. You all have to pay the price till Jesus comes again. Just like I have to pay the price for the danged idiot listening to the woman. And he shall rule over thee. Boy, am I losing supporters tonight. Because there are more women out there that control the purse strings than men. Unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, that ought to scare the liver out of you next time you start listening to your old woman. I have a hard time getting past these verses because I could do something with them tonight, and I will in January. Because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. You want to know why, men, it's so tough to make do? That idiot Adam who listened and hearkened to that woman, the reason you have to work so hard to feed those kids and to support that wife, she doesn't have to get out there now. Everybody's trying to change it. The woman wants, because she hasn't had enough time in it, she wants to enjoy the man's curse. Because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Boy, he's going to founder us on it. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread till thou return unto the ground. For out of it, that is the ground, wast thou taken. For dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return. And Adam called his wife's name Eve, because she was the mother of all living. That graveyard across the way, they're to blame. Forest lawn over there across from King's House 1, these two did it. And God said, behold, the man is become as one of us to know good and evil. Now lest he put forth his hand and take also of the tree of life and eat and live forever. He drove out man, sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from whence he was taken. So he drove out man, he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden cherubims and a flaming sword which turned every way to keep the way of the tree of life. Then they had kids. Cain and Abel, and they got in a fight. And Cain killed Abel. And then they had Seth. And they lived for hundreds of years. Now, I want to look around me tonight. How many of you think you were smarter than you were a year ago? Huh? You're smarter than you were a year ago? Any of you over there that lament over the fact that youth is wasted on the youth? Have you ever whispered as you get 40, 50, 60, 70, 80? If you had the strength and were 30 years old so you could look forward to 40 more good years, knowing what you know now, couldn't you cut a swath? Huh? You got any cameras on my intelligent crowd over there? Is that true or false? How many of you would like to start over knowing what you know now? Huh? Well, how many of you know some of these people lived 800, 900 years? Does that give you any idea how smart? And they started out smart. Their teacher was God. And the devil, he no dummy. Nothing wrong with their smarts. Now, can you imagine? I've learned more in the last 5 years than I did the previous 10 years. Anybody else think that's the way it is? I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to be so smart, another 5 years going to blow my head open by comparison to what I've been. I can't hardly wait to get as smart as I'll be 20 years from now. It compounds. Now, you have any idea how smart you'd be if you could just keep going at the rate you're going, learning, time you're 800? I'm talking about smart. I'm serious. I'm dead serious. You know how smart you'd be? I mean, think how smart Einstein would have been if he had had youth, eyes undimmed, and strength, and could have continued to compound his accumulated knowledge until he was 800 years old. No weaknesses and sicknesses like we have now. I mean, they didn't turn half blind at 60, knee joints out of whack, arthritic, and live 30 years able to fight like Muhammad Ali, and then 770 years in arthritic numbness. I can never get past Ethel when she cracks up. I mean, with her sense of humor at her age, think about how funny she'd find life if she were 700 years old. I want you to understand that there were some geniuses running around by our standards. And they begin to multiply, and they were evil. Some strange things happened in Genesis. I mean, it's a crazy, crazy scene. Talks about how long they lived. These are the book of the generations of Adam, chapter 5. If you're not interested in this, go somewhere else. I'm interested in it. Adam lived 130 years and had a kid in his own likeness. He called him Seth. In the days of Adam, after he had begotten Seth, were 800 years. Dad, you begat me. Do it again. I said, Dad, you begat me. Do what you did again. Can you imagine living 800? Wait a minute, I'm 52. Can you imagine living 748 more years? You'd be smart. And all the days that Adam lived were 930 years, and he died about time. And Seth lived 105 years and begat Enos. I mean, just think of it, Stan. You and Ethel could have played around in your youth until you were 105 before you even had to change anybody's diapers. Ethel said, that's great. And then Seth lived after he begat Enos 807 years, still begatten. And all the days of Seth were 912 years. And he died. Again, I'd say, about time. I want you to get that picture. They lived a while. You got that? It came to pass, when men began to multiply on the face of the earth and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair. Now, there's strange goings on this earth in those days. That the sons of God... See, I don't know about this serpent when he was tempting Eve. I mean, I know I get feelings about snakes that are emotive and subconscious. I mean, I used to hike into the 3,000-foot deep Ball Rock Canyon before they built the big Orville Dam, flooded it, and let everybody get into the place that only a few of us, and my mother said crazy people, in Northern California knew the secret ways to get into that canyon. Best trout fishing in the whole Feather River country in those days. But boy, I could never control myself when I was clambering around the rocks and I'd hear that bzzz of a rattlesnake. I don't even know how I did it. I just was suddenly out in the air and in the middle of the stream. And it better be where I could get back, because if I heard a rattlesnake buzz, I flew. I hate snakes. Can't understand people having snakes as pets. Now, in ancient Egypt, they used to keep them, wrap them around their neck as a means of cooling themselves, some of the royal women. Yuck. But I don't think the devil's a snake in that earthly sense. I think there's some kind of subconscious, primordial urge against him in me. I don't know what the shape of that being called a serpent was. But I know the translation here, and I'm going to wait till I'm teaching on Genesis. These are angels. Supernatural beings, for want of a better word. The word angel just comes from the word that means messenger. These are denizens of eternity. Beings of the nature that we read about in Daniel, Michael, Satan, who in the book of Job appeared in the councils of heaven with the sons of God. These supernatural beings, of which a third of them joined with Satan when he rebelled against God. And Jesus said, I saw Satan, Lucifer, cast down. These obviously were not good, for want of a better word. And angels is not an adequate word. Sons of God's the right one. These supernatural beings were obviously not of the two-thirds that remained with God, because it was never God's will for them to do what they were doing here. And in heaven, forever, O Lord, thy word settled in heaven. So these had to be of the fallen crowd that were with Lucifer, the prince of the power of the air. The sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose. And the Lord said, my spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. There were giants in the earth in those days. And also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare, you notice the word children is in italics, added by the translators. They bore offspring to them, and the same, those offspring, became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. There's a reason why that's the verse about giants. Strange happenings in those days. And God saw that the wickedness of man was very great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. and repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. The Lord said, I will destroy man, whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and the creeping thing, and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Now these are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God, and Noah begat three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The earth was corrupt before God, and God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh is come before me. Behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make me an ark. And he told him how to do it. God wiped out and judged this earth with a flood and spared Noah, his wife, his three sons, their wives. God started over with Noah and his three sons. Noah no sooner touched down on dry land and planted a vineyard than he got drunk. In a drunken stupor, he's laying naked. His son Ham sees him. Josephus records it. He laughed and mocked. The other two sons got a covering and backed up and covered their father. And Noah cursed the descendants of Ham, particularly through Canaan. Blessed Japheth with a blessing of enlargement, which I have preached upon, and promised to Shem a unique blessing that flows through Abram, as we know, ultimately in Christ and in the chosen people. I've been reading, you know, a lot in my library of late. With that little background for a minute, I'm going to intrigue you a bit for Genesis. And for our Holy Land trip, it's 11 o'clock. My Lord, help us. Everybody knows about the pyramids in Egypt. Who here hasn't heard of the pyramids? I mean, everybody knows about the pyramids. What you don't know, I'm sure a lot of you, is the nature of those pyramids, all of them. But particularly the biggest one, credited traditionally to Cheops, one of the rulers of the dynasty, and thought originally to be built solely for his tomb. Can I read you something? How many of you know that Abram from Mount Gerizim in his day could see the light reflecting off those pyramids covered in that day with polished limestone, stripped off by the Arabs when they didn't find riches in the tomb and used to build their very mosques in Egypt? But in the day of its glory, and in Abram's day, covered with shimmering limestone that reflected the light, and they could be seen by Abram. Not too many people know the influence that pyramid had on Napoleon. He came out of the chamber, the king's chamber, where the sarcophagus, which has the exact measurements of the Ark of the Covenant. You know, there's a lot of truth in the Raiders of the Lost Ark and a lot of Hollywood in it. But it has the exact measurements of the Ark of the Covenant. He stood in that king's chamber alone, came out for Napoleon, as recorded, pale and shaken, having had some kind of mystical experience. He started to tell his aide and then said, no, you wouldn't believe it. Even on St. Helena, in his days of exile, in one sad moment, he started to tell someone and then backed up and said, no, you wouldn't believe it. He came out of that place shaken, having undergone some strange experience. From there he went to his attack in Russia that was his end, really. Everybody's been very excited of late because they thought that certain new scientific instruments would enable them to shoot beams and rays and calculations through that pyramid to find other cavities in it. They brought it home to universities here in the States, and the computers would play the data and it would come out different each time. And they're still stumped on it because it was a major expense research, and they have no explanation for why the instruments didn't work. Can I read to you some more? So I'm going up to a prophetic thing. I'm not about to take you into this heavy because I'm going to do something in January, but I want to start baiting you with some of the areas we're going to see. Does the Great Pyramid of Cheops enshrine a lost science? Was this last remaining of the seven wonders of the world described in Greek literature, most of whom you can't find? Often described as the most sublime landmark in history, designed by mysterious architects who had a deeper knowledge of the secrets of this universe than those who followed them. For centuries, a debate has been waged between the supporters of the theory that it was built by people with super knowledge and its opponents, with eminent scientists and academicians lining up on either side. See, when I take you to the Holy Land, we're not going to mess around with the souvenir sellers and the camel rides. I mean, if you want to ride a camel, you go with somebody else. They're the most disagreeable animal this world ever produced. And it doesn't take intelligence to ride a camel, just a loose-jointed drunk. We'll go in a limousine, air-conditioned, or a bus. I'm interested in this pyramid, not the souvenir junk. Till recently, there was no proof that the inhabitants of Egypt of 3, 4, 5, it's debated, 1,000 years ago were capable of precise astronomical calculations. So I'm going to ask you a question before long. Who built this? Some godless, pre-flood character? Or did Ham build it, whose name is traced in the original naming of Mizraim, the cursed one? Did Ham build it, whose name traced to its root means the embanker, the one who drove back the sea and turned the marsh in what in ancient literature is called the Great Sea or the Great Marsh in the area that Egypt now sits in its lowlands. Ham's name is traced, and his name is given to the ancient name of Egypt as the one who was the embanker and drove the waters back. Did Ham build it? Cursed, turning bad, great-grandfather of Nimrod, producer of Canaan, the one with enmity against the promised people. Did he build it? Was it built with the help of the devil and superhuman genius as the greatest landmark on this earth to the heathen sun worship? as the remaining and much greater effort of man's activity than the Tower of Babel ever could be? Or was it built by a God-directed, angel-helped, genius-given, supernatural directions? God gave the directions to Moses. When he built the tabernacle, God said, build it exactly. Did Enoch build it? He sure was on talking terms with God. How many know Enoch walked and talked with God and was not? For God took him. You know, it's late. I don't expect you shallow ones to stay with me. I'm going to sort some of you out tonight as I anticipate what's coming around the bend. Did Enoch build it? Did Shem build it? That one good son of Noah that is the one that killed Nimrod and restored a bit of the priesthood again. Did Noah build it? Did Noah build Kenosis, that great city on Crete, and also build the pyramids if they were built after the flood? If they were built before the flood, was it Enoch? Or was it some of these offspring of the sons of God? It was attributed to chance that the foundations were almost perfectly oriented to true north, that its structure, centuries before modern mathematicians coming out of the medieval period or the Middle Ages discovered pi, that constant factor that nobody can really explain, but the constant factor which, if you multiply it by the diameter of a circle, will give you the circumference. That great breakthrough in mathematics that changed the measurements of the world, that has a scientist in modern history identified as discovering it. The person who built the pyramid knew all about it. Its structure incorporated a value for pi, the constant for which the diameter of a circle may be multiplied to give its true circumference. Are you too far out of early grammar school and high school math to not know what pi is? Everybody know what pi is? The constant, accurate to several decimals and in several distinct and unmistakable ways. This is going to be heavy right here. But think of this when the pyramid was built. That its main chamber incorporated the, quote, sacred 3, 4, 5, and 2 triangles.
This is the end of side 1.